Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to Thursday. It is almost a Friday. We're getting there. We're going to have you all the way to the end of the week before you know it. In the meantime, we got a great show laid on, but JP is pushing buttons on the board. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
It does feel like a Friday. I don't know if it was the long weekend or a lot of stuff going on, but
we had a short week and it feels like a long week. Why is that? I don't know.
A lot of stuff going on. It's a good thing.
A lot of stuff going on here, as a matter of fact. Right Side Media's got it going on right now, you guys. I mean, listen, our plate is full. Just had great meetings all day long. JP's got some pretty cool stuff happening on the digital side. And all said and done, Right Side Media is off and running. We're glad you guys are with us. So coming up today on today's show, you know the deal, it's Thursday. Butters and Lee, 3:30. So we got Butters and Lee coming on at 3:30. And then, I got a triple dipper just filled up with stuff you're going to like. Hit it, man.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. First one out the gate, didn't get to it yesterday. Why not? I had too much stuff. Well, show me the money. That's number one. We're going to stop talking about Kamala Harris pretty soon because guess what? We're going to be unburdened by that which has gone before us. However, she's still there right now, and I want to know where the money went. What did she do with $1 billion? We got some information on that, and some of it's almost laughable. Number one, Triple Dipper, we'll talk about it. Show me the money. Number two, you know the word. It's a word that we coined on this show for you, several years ago. We use it quite often. It is a government run by the least competent of its citizens. What is that? A kakistocracy. So yeah, number two on the Triple Dipper, we're going to talk about layers of kakistocracy that we're going to be so glad when it's gone. And then number three, I just called this one Stop the Madness. It's not Adventures in Woke World. It's like Adventures in Woke World, but yet gone bad. Things we've got to get rid of. Things that Doge may get rid of for us. Things that the Trump administration may get rid of. And by the way, things that the voters of America desperately want to get rid of, apparently. We're going to talk about it. Stop the Madness is number three on the Triple Dipper. Well, all right, let me jump on into today's Right Side Way monologue. And I got to tell you, I'm looking around at some of what's been happening in culture, some of the things that we have been experiencing as a people. And there's that old adage, right, of the frog in the boiling water. You know the storyline. A frog is placed into a pot of water, swims around contentedly, never realizing that someone has actually turned on the heat, and the water is slowly moving towards a full boil. And the frog, without knowing any better, never takes its mind off its own contentedness. It just swims along, and before it realizes the danger it's in, it's just like it's way too late. The water boils, the frog is cooked. Well, folks, our society, our culture, our nation has been swimming along like a bunch of frogs in a pot. But I do believe, and I say this with all sincerity, I was telling Charlene this morning, I do believe that we are in what I would call a time of turning. I can feel it. Can you? So Charlene and I were talking recently. She adamantly said, you got to keep reminding your folks not to let themselves get numb to what's going on in our country right now. And she's absolutely right. She usually is. We cannot allow ourselves, our neighbors, our friends, and family to become numb to the cultural shifts that the left keeps trying to foist on us. And it's everywhere. It's in every corner of society, at every turn. You know, we can have satanic ceremonies celebrated as culture on the Grammys, and churches say nothing because it's art. We can have whole hospitals given over to the notion of transgender surgeries and treatments on minors to forever alter their appearance, and it's just celebrated as awareness. We can have our border ransacked by illegal immigration numbering in the millions, and it's feted to the world as openness. We can have failing schools teach failed concepts like critical race theory, and it's called an awakening to the truth. We can have blind spending sprees out of Washington, D.C. that drive our debt into astronomical figures, and we're told it's actually inflation reduction. All of that and more has been happening. In many places, it's still happening right now. But here's the other thing that Charlene says often. There's more of us than there are of them. You hear me say it. I believe it's true. If you get down to it, we just proved that to be a fact, y'all. When the right side of politics won both the Electoral College and the popular vote, we proved for a fact that there are more of us than there are of them. It's a sign of that time of turning that I was talking about. I believe the vast majority of America is still actually desirous of traditional values and conservative principles. But what good is it to have, you know, an army that outnumbers its enemies if the army's asleep when the enemy comes marching? So we got to stay awake. We got to stay alert to stay alive. Got to keep our heads on a swivel. And we got to have a plan. It's time to get back to realities. I mean, real realities. Stop spending so much time allowing our culture to be pretended and offended by what are no more than really first world problems. First world problems, what is that? Well, first world problems are really not problems. They're usually things people make up. You got to quit being all involved in first world problems or even allowing them to be foisted on us and forget that the realities of life are not solved by wokeisms and platitudes and people following their own truth. You see, wokeists on the progressive left and the liberal media allies, they always create a first world solution, and then they create the first world problem to help them validate their predetermined first world solution. What do I mean by that? Here's one, an example. Wokeists desperately want to co-opt our kids into believing the lies that transgenderism is built on. So rather than just live out their adult fetishes and fantasies, they create the idea that gender is fluid. Then they create the idea that children need to be affirmed for their gender dysphoria. Then they create the whole cottage industry of medical hacks and quacks and liberal pundits who all agree, and voila, suddenly children are being affirmed and growing up to believe that men can compete in women's sports. They create the problem to fit their woke solutions. Look, only in the first world, y'all. Only in the first world does that kind of thing happen. It reminds me of another experience. In Afghanistan, I lived among the Afghan people, right? Very often on the sides of the walls of a dilapidated dwelling made of mud bricks, I would see these round patties. They looked like Frisbees made out of mud. And they were usually stuck to the sides of the walls. They lined the walls, usually on the sunny side of a building, stuck in row after row after row. Sometimes there'd be dozens of them on the wall outside of a house. And I asked my interpreter one day, what are these things? And he said, oh, sir, those are tapi. So tapi, as I came to understand it, is animal dung. It's been collected, it's been mashed and stomped on to make it uniform in its consistency. Then they add straw to it to give it body, and they make it into flat discs, and they stick it on the walls to dry. In the colder months, tapi was actually burned in the home for heat. Stoves were burning tapi for cooking. There were people who made tapi patties and sold them for food money. So on the one hand, we would use it as a joke, sometimes call each other tapi heads, complain the food was nothing but tapi. But the reality of tapi has stuck with me for all these years. You see, those are people who know of no other means to cook or provide heat than to hand collect animal waste to dry it in the sun and burn it for fuel, and I guarantee you they don't care what your pronouns are. But then you look back at the ridiculous things that wokeists will say here in the first world, where we don't burn tapi, where we don't have to step on it and add straw to it and stick it on the sides of our house. Like the left-wing academic who recently declared that people who bring cake to the office for their coworkers are actually causing harm. So apparently cake is now a woke issue. Or drag queen presentations at a middle school breakfast event that parents were not apprised of in advance. When did it become okay to circumvent parents? Any issues with that? Or how about the story of the 10-year-old, 10, who allegedly has been a transgender activist since he was just five. He's moving to another state to get away from the so-called transphobics in his community. Let me suggest it's actually his activist mother that made him an activist at 5 years old, and that five-year-olds don't really move themselves across state lines. In a country where they burn tapi for heat, they major in the majors. In a country where they burn tapi for heat, they would love to have some of that extra cake that people in our country claim is now harming each other, their coworkers. But in a country where it become commonplace for small children to be seen as hero activists by telling the world that boys can be girls, that's a classic case of majoring in the minors because we've become so culturally soft that we no longer see the need to major in the majors. But back to my original point, I think the signs of the turning are everywhere. And yes, there is a resistance to such wokeisms, and I'm glad that this show has a chance to provide some air cover to those who want to push back on all of it. But make no mistake, the underlying thread is not just the agendas of this group or that group or who got elected or whether Hunter Biden's laptop will ever see the light of day or whether we can get to net zero emissions or whether they convince us that eating bugs is as good as eating bacon or that cow flatulence has to be stopped. All that is really first world problems. But I believe, though, having said all that, that we are entering into unprecedented times. I do believe that we are in a time of turning, a time when the cultural inflection point actually turned in the right direction. And more than ever, to make that turning happen to its fullest, it's going to be necessary for good men and women like all of us of principle to be fully and completely situationally aware of their surroundings, of their times, of their actions, of their opposition, with knowledge of what they should do. You may have to speak up. You may have to know your position well enough to be able to add clarity. You may indeed have to even address concerns that you shouldn't have to address, but if you don't, they'll only get worse. But the last thing we need to be doing right now is turning a blind eye. The last thing we need to do right now is put our heads in the sand, and that's where we are, though, the turning point. We can live as sheep or sheepdogs. We have to stay alert. We cannot become numb. So I'm being watchful. I know many of you are too, and I encourage all of you, be watchful, be mindful. I'm making a conscious effort to enjoy life, to love, to laugh, but also to fight. I refuse to sit idly in my pot like a sleepy frog and just get slow boiled. And we would all do well to heed my lovely Charlene's advice. We cannot allow ourselves to get numb to it all. Why should we? There's more of us than there are of them. This is our time to turn. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way. Yeah, first world problems. We have so often allowed first world problems to be seen as real problems when they're not. All they are is first world agendas couched as a problem. We've got to stop letting culture go down that road. And I believe the turning is now. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades up in here. That's what we're doing. I'm just sitting here having a cup of coffee. And I mean, that is the official drink of Right Side Radio. So why would I not? But the text lines are open, 833-687-4448. Join me for an afternoon cup of coffee, why don't you? 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it or call it, same number for both. By the way, the newsletter thing is going strong. A bunch of you guys have already signed up. I am just like blown away. And we expect to see that expanded even more in the days to come. If you're not already getting it, then you want to sign up for the Daily Right Side Report, we call it. It's an email blast that comes to your box, tells you all the things going on at Right Side Media, gives you the triple dippers in advance, links to all the resources, tells you whether we're selling any new t-shirts and stuff, tells you when the new podcasts come out. All those things are in the Right Side Report. All you got to do is text one word, newsletter. It's one word, newsletter, to the 833-68-RIGHT telephone number. It will immediately send you back a link that lets you sign up. So, yeah, we'd love to, if you want to get the Right Side Report, we'd love to get you on there. So just send us the word newsletter, and we'll get you squared away. David from Madison said, I truly appreciate the topic of discussion right now. Said, I'm seeing more and more on social media the intent to make pedophilia an accepted sexual preference. This is exactly what they did with transgender, homosexuality, other preferences for society to accept them. This is the first stage trying to push pedophilia as a norm onto the greater society, and it's ridiculous. It's not only ridiculous, it's just gross. But David, I don't disagree. I mean, they're trying to get into kids' heads early to normalize themselves while the kids' minds are still forming their conceptions about the world around them. And when you know for a fact that's what's happening, You can address it strongly, but you also know for a fact that's what's happening when they don't want the parents involved. So anybody who says, well, we're going to do this, but we're not going to tell your parents because they might not accept this. Bing! There ought to be like, I don't know, a laser from the sky ought to take them out right there on the spot. Steve from Tennessee says, off topic. He says, the RNC ought to be offering large bounty payments for bona fide proof of election cheating. We are now living in a third world in our elections. Steve from Tennessee. Yeah, Steve, there's some. Now, granted, the results are coming out okay, with the exception of I am really bothered by the Kerry Lake race out in Arizona. Because we just I think, had a House seat declared for us in Arizona. Trump won Arizona. But they're telling us that Kerry Lake did not. Either they have, A, a bunch of crossover voters, or B, something's afoot. I don't know. John from Huntsville says, Phil, fantastic monologue. Also, Just want to let JP know that because he had such a positive things about my SpongeBob yesterday, that he went from my fifth favorite radio person to tied for first with his Uncle Phil.
Why was I at fifth in the first place?
Well, don't be ungrateful. He says, by the way, JP, the key to a good grade is positive comments about David Hasselhoff and SpongeBob and negative comments about the TV show Seinfeld and anything Alabama football.
Well, I don't know if the latter two will happen very often because I love both of those things.
Oh, see, there you go. Jim from Huntsville signing up for the newsletter. Thank you, Jim. Follow that link, man. It'll square you away. Jeffro from Indiana says, Phil, when this country collapses, I can see the headlines now. The American economy collapses. Liberals and whatever they identify as are impacted the most. We're not going to collapse, brother. Not going to do it. Jesus is coming back for that. Allie from Athens says, sometimes I wish there could be a mandatory field trip to a Middle East combat zone in the middle of winter. Said, I know it changed me forever. Said, I realized that Veterans Day was on Monday, but once again, I'd like to thank you for your service, Colonel Williams. Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate you, Allie, and I appreciate your service to our troops also. She makes a point. So I mentioned in my monologue about living among the Afghan people, and then I did my tour in Iraq also. I'll be honest with you. I knew that I appreciated my country before I went overseas. I came home with an even greater appreciation for it. I mean, I can still remember doing a mission trip to Reynosa, Mexico, long before I deployed overseas, and coming back with such a deep appreciation for the simple little rancher house that we lived in, because I had been building so-called houses for people that were nothing more than my garden shed in the backyard. And then you go to a place like Afghanistan, where they've lived under tyranny and torture for decades. And you see people actually having to take animal dung and make a living selling animal dung for people to burn for fuel for their cook pots. I mean, it's just, and not everybody was dirt poor, but a lot of them were. JT Lacey Springs says, today's monologue was some good toffee. Oddly enough, available on eBay. Toppy. Okay, yeah. It's, by the way, we spelled it T-A-P-I, Toppy. That's so if it's, he says also, has Kareem responded to the election results? Has Kareem responded? I don't think he has.
No, he called in right before Dale Strong came on the other day, and I told him to call him back, but he never did. So, no, not yet, but if Kareem is listening out there, the people want to know.
I think he owes me a steak. Yeah. All right, you guys, we got plenty more where that came from. Coming up, Show Me the Money, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I'm talking about this one right here. Y'all, it's Alabama. I mean to say, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. All right, so plenty to talk about. Not the least of which, though, is the First Dipper. Show me the money. So, you know, on the one hand, I don't know about y'all. On the one hand, I am tired of talking about Kamala Harris. I almost feel like I don't have to talk about her anymore because, you know, she lost. She lost big. Hopefully she's going to be out of politics, out of our lives, like for, I don't know, ever. But I still get, every once in a while I pause and think, you know what? She's still the Vice President of the United States of America right now. I mean, as we speak, she is the Vice President of the United States of America with authority to preside over the U.S. Senate. She's a senior executive in the world right now. Having said that, it brings it back around to me saying, dadgummit, there needs to be some accountability. There just does. And somebody needs to ask her a freaking hard question, and somebody on her side needs to come up with a hard answer. Like, here's this. Show me the money. Where did it go? What did you do? So Ted Cruz, by the way, listen, Ted Cruz was like one of my hopes for attorney general. Nonetheless, Ted Cruz has got one of the most incisive wits. He's very dry, but he's like sharp. And the guy is super intelligent. Ted Cruz just has his own podcast. And he just said the other day, he said Vice President Kamala Harris basically had the fire festival of campaigns. I had to go remind myself about fire festival. You remember a fire festival? Remember that one, JP?
No.
Oh, Pete. Okay, it's 2017.
Oh, okay.
You were embroiled in what, high school, I guess, at that point?
Yeah, freshman.
Okay, so 2017 Fyre Festival. It was this giant, it was billed as this giant, epic getaway to go camping, like a Woodstock, but yet luxury Woodstock, camping on a Bahamian island called Great Exuma. There are all these big talents that were going to come play. I mean, they had like Blink 182 and the Migos and Kendall Jenner and Hailey Bieber were helping promote it and all this kind of stuff. And so it was like this huge deal, Fyre Festival. $29 million in outside investment. People began showing up and nothing was there. They had all these canceled bands that never had really been locked in, but they were billed anyway. They were like bare mattresses laying on floors and storm-ravaged tents for people to sleep on. They're like, what? There were some cheese sandwiches, and that's about it, in takeaway containers. There was no running water. There was no electricity. There were no toilet facilities. $29 million disappeared.
Wow.
And the guy who put it together was Billy McFarland and Ja Rule. Isn't Ja Rule a rapper?
Yes, he is.
Billy McFarland and Ja Rule. And so, yeah, they had like this whole credit card company that was going to be sponsoring exclusive parties and VIP events. Poof, went away. They had Fyre Media was the company that was putting everything together. Poof, went away. $29 million disappeared. Billy McFarland did a number of years in prison. It was a giant scam. People were paying $1,400 a ticket. Some were paying like upwards of $1 million to go and have the experience on the Bahamian island, dancing and getting high and watching concerts. And it's like, poof, all went away. So
that's a good analogy for what happened.
So having said all that, so Kamala Harris ran what Ted Cruz mockingly calls the Fyre Festival of campaigns. He said Trump spent roughly $488 million. That's a lot of money. What we could do with Right Side Media with a mere half of that.
Or a mere quarter of that.
Okay, a third. Yeah. Maybe 10%.
Yeah.
Anyway, $488 million was spent by Trump, but Kamala spent a billion. She outspent Trump more than 2-1. So now you have to ask the question. Cruz asked it. I'm asking it. Where'd the money go? Well, one of the things we're finding out is she began paying a lot of celebrities to make appearances on her behalf. But wait, I thought those were endorsements. Were they not? I don't know that we can call them true endorsements if we had to pay you to get there. So think back to July. Do we have to? Yes. Think back to July. Article here I pulled off of local station WGBH says that when Kamala first took over as the lead candidate for the Democrats, there's all these questions about, okay, wait a minute, we got a bunch of money in the Biden-Harris campaign. Can she access those funds? It was a question. Why was it a question? Well, because you just don't hand away money like that. You just don't throw it all out there. You just don't let somebody have access to funds that weren't raised for the purposes for which they're now being asked to be used. Now you look back and go, those questions were pretty legit. Meanwhile, at the time, there were spokespeople for the Harris campaign that were saying, well, we're not surprised there's mischief afoot with Republicans trying to question the very aspects of us having these funds available to us. Well, weren't they geniuses for asking now? In the hours immediately after the announcement, though, even without getting those funds right away, Harris received nearly $50 million in donations in the first 24 hours after being named. She had money being lavished on her, just throwing it out. I mean, it was to the point, it's epic. I think it may have been even a fundraising record. There was money being thrown at her feet, just Benjamins flying everywhere. And now nobody can really truly account for all of it, and she's $20 million in debt. How do you take $1 billion, lose everything, gain nothing, literally nothing, gain nothing, and you're $20 million in debt? I can just tell you, having run a much lower-level campaign, four-county state Senate race, My last race was one of the most expensive legislative races of the year. I think I personally raised and spent like $770,000 or something like that. But one of my absolute mandates was, we will watch the dollar signs, we will report accordingly, and we will not go into debt. We will not. And it's very easy. By the way, you can get caught up into, we got to have another ad buy. Send them, but then you don't realize that somebody didn't balance the books, and so now you spent money you already spent over here. If you're not careful, it gets into a super flurry at the end. Well, they didn't have that kind of, you know, watch guard. They didn't have somebody, I guess, minding the store. They didn't have a mandate that says, we will not. You know why? Because the same person that is vice president of the United States right now that wanted to be your president is fiscally irresponsible. She has no idea what it means to be fiscally responsible, and a look at her campaign will tell you just that. I got a call on line one. Let me grab it real quick. Hey, it's Sparky. Sparky from Harvest. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, great show, you guys. Sorry I haven't called since the election. I'm too busy giggling, and I go into the giggling fit, and I'm afraid I'll embarrass myself on the phone. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. Would anybody stand back and watch this woman's people and her campaign, who are all going to be in her White House, right?
Right.
If they go that much in debt and blow that much money for absolutely nothing, can you imagine how much worse the national debt would be in just 4 years? And it's already in an atrocious state. But anyway, remember Hillary Clinton? I think she spent 4 to 5 times as much on her campaign back in 2016. And I giggled all the time back then too, walking down the aisle of the grocery store or swimming my Navy survival strokes in the pool for my cardio. The lifeguards are like, "What is that old man laughing about?" I'm like, "Private joke." But anyway, good stuff. Hey,
private joke. He just thinks funny sometimes.
Well, I apologize. I was that guy 6 or 8 months ago who said Trump never should have been nominated. He can't win because the hatred for Donald Trump is greater than the energy that we can generate. And in the last few weeks, I've started thinking, you know, I'm wrong. I'm really wrong. There's a lot of energy for this man this time, and he's got a purpose and a vision, and the other side doesn't. And sure enough.
Well,
anyway, I'm gonna hang up and I'm gonna go into gales of giggles right now.
Well, you're welcome to stay in the club, man. We'll keep you. How about that?
All right, God bless. Good evening.
We'll see you, buddy. Yeah, I mean, listen, it is. I think it's just across the board right now. There's a different feeling. You know, I said earlier in my monologue that I don't know about you, I can feel the turning. There's a different energy. There's a different optimism. There's a different sense of purpose. And there is certainly more to laugh about, smile about. Now, granted, I'm not if you're a leftist, but I'm okay with that. I share Sparky's enthusiasm, man. I also look at the bullet we dodged, y'all. Look at the bullet we dodged. Which, if she's going to be that fiscally irresponsible with the campaign to take the office, what would she have done once she had the checkbook of the U.S. government? And I shudder to think how this could have gone. It was bad enough that she cast the deciding vote on the Inflation Reduction Act, which did nothing to reduce inflation, or the ARPA funds that just threw billions and billions of dollars into our economy and drove us into 40-year high inflation. She has zero clue how to run any organization, zero clue what it means to be fiscally responsible. She just spends because I must have more money. There's still more checks. It doesn't work like that. All right, listen, we'll take a break right now. We'll come right back. I got some more on this. It's a hoot, man. We're gonna talk about what the FEC filings actually say. And then, you know, did you hear what she paid some people like Al Sharpton? Oh, this is a good one. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like making common sense like a superpower. A bunch of text messages dropping in. Let me get a few real quick. Bob from Decatur believes that Cream is out there busy somewhere with TDS therapy sessions. No time to call. That's possible. That's very possible. Cream, you're welcome to call in, man. We still love you in spite of yourself. Mark from Red Bay, Alabama, says Kamala was using Bidenomics and she was loving it. Point taken. Alice from Huntsville says Ted Cruz is my choice also, and Matt Whitaker next. Yeah, Matt Whitaker would have been something else. And by the way, speaking of appointments, breaking news right now as we speak, up on the screens here in the studio, Trump has tapped RFK Jr. to be Secretary of Health and Human Services. Wow. Just wow, wow, wow. And, you know, I don't know how the medical field is going to take to that. But then again, I mean, how did they take to the fact that he had the Undersecretary for Health and Human Services was a dude wearing a dress? I mean, you know, just saying. I'll go ahead and take RFK Jr. Yep, like as of today, I'll take him. Can we go ahead and make that swap immediate? It's really – by the way, I got to ask you, JP, so are you fueled back up from that donut, by the way?
About halfway. I ate about half the donut. So.
Half of it? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we have a great bakery that's unfortunately right next door almost to the studio. And so just happened to have a dozen donuts that walked in the house today. Is it just me, or is like the Trump appointments process like watching the NFL draft right now?
I saw that tweet. Elon reposted it. And yeah, I don't remember like people being this excited on appointments being made. I think you nailed it in terms of people can feel a vibe shift and it's almost like the first Trump administration, and he even said this, where he wasn't very, it was his first time being a politician, so he wasn't really, he was kind of trusting people on who to appoint. Yeah. But now he's, you know, made a point of now he knows who to appoint and he's going to make better appointments. So that... I think that adds to the excitement of what's he going to do this time. And it's, yeah.
And you know what they should have done? They should have done it like the NFL draft. they should have had Trump or one of his chief surrogates or whatever getting up on stage and saying, for Health and Human Services, the Trump administration taps. And then like this moment of suspense. And you see like there's RFK Jr. on the couch at home with his family and they're watching and he says, RFK Jr. And they all go crazy, you know, and they're like, and he's wearing a jersey. Next thing you know, it says HHS.
That would have been fun. No, but it's true. I mean, there's just a level of excitement around this new, the second Trump term that, you know, it's, and plus bringing in people like Elon, I think adds excitement of overall of just that this is not a replay of the first administration, which was a great, you know, a great 4 years, but also a lot of improvements could have been made on the appointment side of things, which I think people are very excited about.
Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting, too, is the speed with which he's doing it. He's not wasting. He did take quite a while to get his cabinet rounded out the first time. And part of that was because he was new and figuring things out, I'm sure. It was a different animal. I remember there were people saying, you know, he's coming from the private sector. He's never had to do it quite this way. Okay, but he gets it now.
I think he's had some time to think about it as well.
Oh, Lord, yes. And I think what we're seeing, too, is he said there were things in the campaign he was going to do, and now he's appointing the people who you know will do it. I'm personally pretty stoked. There's a few of these choices, and I won't poison the well because we're going to do Butters and Lee later, and I may or may not ask them a question about appointments. But I'm of the mind that most of what I'm seeing right now, I'm like spot on, man. Bring the team. I mean, this is like it's turning into All-Star at this point.
Yeah.
John from Huntsville's got a text for you, JP. I'll let you take care of it.
It's not going to happen.
Come on. Thomas from Athens says, difficult to follow all the money, $1 billion. That much money lavished in so many ways makes me wonder if there are not some or many quid pro quos or kickbacks. Well, of course there are. But when I read you the list of where some of the money went, you'll know where it went. I mean, it's like, phew. They have to do filings. And by the way, when you say quid pro quo or kickbacks, remember this is a campaign. So you can make promises in a campaign. You can't promise power. Like she's a vice president. She can't give someone access to governance in return for their endorsement. She can't do that. But she can promise somebody a potential role in the administration. She can do that as a part of the campaign. But the FEC requires that every penny be accounted for. So there are, and it gets, by the way, it got to the point that it was madness. even for my state Senate campaigns, we would run and you have to do, at first you have to do, I want to say at first it's a quarterly filing, then it turns into a monthly filing. And then as you get closer, it's a bi-monthly and then it's a weekly filing. And towards the end, you're doing daily filings. It's to the point that like, I gotta go campaign for the love of God, but they're keeping track of the money. And right down to the penny. Jimmy from Del Rose, Tennessee says, Phil, the only birds singing outside the Democrats' windows are buzzards. Jeff Rowe from Indiana again says, you know, Phil, if Trump starts cutting up all these welfare people who are more able-bodied than me, what does he mean? Cutting up all these welfare people who are more able-bodied than me, I think we need to make a bunch of signs that read, we'll work for Toppy. Said, I'm sure several of them would hold that sign thinking it's something good. No doubt. Bunch of Toppy heads. And then David from Bucky says, Phil, I remember way back during my Army days when everybody was kiting checks so often, I would hear, I had checks, so I thought I had money, from both young soldiers and their spouses. I think Harris and the federal government should be like us and be required to live within their means. Yeah, no doubt. All right, listen, I did not even get to the list of things that we did know she spent money on, to include some that may have some ethics violations attached to them. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. Oh, yeah, like the dude just said. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to hour number two. Hour number two on a Thursday as we move you towards a Friday and get you to the good weekend. And I just said before the break that HHS Secretary is expected now to be RFK Jr., which is amazing, which is really cool. Think about what that means. Trump is not afraid to appoint people outside of the party. He's willing to broaden his scope. He's actually honoring people who have actually said what they said on the campaign trail, and he is glad of it. But the reality is, we've got a whole lot going on just in general, and we're still looking at how did the Kamala Harris campaign explode, I don't know how to explain it. Nobody can. So let me run through a couple more things here. And a piece from CNN points out on October 9th that the surge in giving that Harris has rocketed her past Trump's campaign, that his team had announced collecting roughly $430 million jointly between them and the Republican Party, but that it was overshadowed now by the Harris campaign. Well, then you got a piece from Fox just, what, a month later? Exactly a month later, calling it a $1 billion disaster. And here's what the FEC filings have. So the Federal Election Commission requires filings that show you to the penny where the money went. You can't hand 50 bucks to your favorite unless you're going to fake all the reports, which you can do. But what I'm saying is everything has to be accounted for. Well, we show right now she made two $500,000 separate payments to Oprah Winfrey's company, which is called Harpo Productions. Well, Oprah Winfrey swears she didn't get a dime of it. Okay, just your organization that writes your paycheck. But yeah, Harpo Productions just, I don't know how to explain what's going on. It's the reality is she got $1 million, she says, for production costs. But wow, it is just unconscionable that had to happen. If you're going to be a billionaire and you're going to endorse a presidential candidate, you're going to make them pay you $1 million to set up the stage for the actual event. Or how about this? $4 million to Village Marketing Agency. Why is that important? It's a company that helps you tie in with social media influencers. Oh, really? So they're doling out money to social media influencers to, oh, by the way, buy their influence. How about this? We had a long list of celebrities: Beyonce, Bon Jovi, Ricky Martin, Jennifer Lopez, Bruce Springsteen. And I'll be honest with you, if they're going to say all this is going on and celebrities are being paid, if one of those doesn't come out sometime soon and say, I never got paid, then the assumption is they got paid. Don't you think? I mean, if we're going to say their name, hey, Bon Jovi, I've liked your music since high school. If we're going to say that they suddenly are on a list of people who sponsored and you wonder, did they get paid, and they're not bothering to refute it, you have to look at it and go, yeah, they got paid. $15 million on event production. I mean, it's to the point now that the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, is actually saying this is a $1 billion disaster. That's not a Republican that said that. That is the DNC National Finance Committee member saying this is a $1 billion disaster. It's just unreal. But then you look at six-figure checks made to activist groups. Six-figure checks to activist groups in September. Left-leaning groups like the Black Voters Matter Fund, tied to Louis Farrakhan. Oh, boy. The Black Church PAC got $150,000. Oh, boy. But then despite her, you know, climate change is the worst thing in the world thing, suddenly we have $4 million to a company called Advanced Aviation to fly people around on private jets. And then we have $56 million in campaign payroll. I get it. Some of that happens. You have $100 million to strategy firms and marketing firms. I guess I get it, but wow, a lot. And then at the end of it all, you have $118 million in the bank just a mere 3 weeks before the election, and yet, ba-boom, you end up $20 million in debt. Well, one of the things that happened that I think is probably one of the most unconscionable is one of those moments where you look at it and go, yes, somebody really ought to look into this and find out whether there has been a violation of some form of ethics laws or some form of broadcasting. I mean, you've got right now Al Sharpton. Did you talk about Al Sharpton? I did. Al Sharpton. Well, he's an MSNBC pundit, is he not? Yes, he is. Al Sharpton. Al Sharpton got, among other things, how much did he get? $500,000. What? Yes. Kamala Harris's, according to the Free Beacon, Kamala Harris's presidential campaign donated $500,000 to Al Sharpton's nonprofit just weeks before the MSNBC host gave her like a puff interview. So let me get this straight. The media elites think it's okay if on the side they're making a whole lot of money from the candidate who they're then going to bring on in their official capacity with the media and do an interview and then pretend it's all above board. The campaign's remittance to Sharpton's National Action Network, according to FreeBeacon.com, was part of a flurry of donations to Black and Latino advocacy groups that were trying to win Harris support from those constituencies, Free Beacon says. Dateline 2 days ago. And then Al Sharpton aired a video of Harris wishing him happy birthday on his MSNBC show. Happy birthday, Rev, she said. You've been all over for your years. Such an extraordinary leader. And then he did a glowing interview with her on October 20th. So, yeah, 3 weeks before the interview, $500,000 to his personal organization. Then he goes on MSNBC and pretends he's actually just an interviewer. No, he's not. If that's not a paid endorsement, I don't know what is. And oh, by the way, there are things called equal access laws that govern the use of media. For instance, I can have you know, Tommy Tuberville here on the show every day, Senator Tuberville, it doesn't matter. He can come on every day. He's the elected senator. If he was running for office and he had competition, I would have to, by law, offer his competition the opportunity to come on. Equal access. This is why Saturday Night Live got in so much trouble. Because Saturday Night Live, 2 days, 3 days before the election, did a big Kamala's with us night. And it was all big fun. Kamala's with us. She's on stage on Saturday Night Live. Whoop, whoop. It's all big fun. No, it wasn't. It allowed for unequal access to the network. And now you got, literally, they've got the books on this. The Harris campaign gives $500,000 to Al Sharpton's personal organization. And 3 weeks later, he does a puffy interview with her on MSNBC. I want to know at what point is the, what is it, the FTC? Which one is the governing for, I just forgot which one will fine us if we have a cuss word on the air.
Is it the FCC?
FCC, thank you. Federal Communications Commission. I want to know when they're going to investigate this and MSNBC allowing that to happen. I mean, what would happen if I don't know, pick one. Donald Trump did an interview with, say, Laura Ingraham, but Laura Ingraham first got paid $500,000 before she did the interview. Can you imagine the outroar? The uproar, the outcry? It would be unreal. Let me go to the phone real quick before I run out of time. I just realized I got a call holding on the... Oh, Wolverine Dan. Hey, man, how you doing? Wolverine Dan, how you doing, buddy?
Hello.
Hello. How you, bud?
Hey, Phil, I'm sorry. I'm in my Mustang GT 25-year anniversary, and it's a ragtop, so it's kind of like a wind tunnel, so I apologize.
No worries. What's on your mind, brother?
Well, a couple things. First off, Sparky called, and boy, it's good to hear Sparky. Him and I go back a long way. He got worked out the same place I worked out, and I didn't see him in a while. He must be somewhere else. But anyway, I wanted to thank you for what you're doing. See, you really need to tell the truth and expose what's going on. That is your job. You're doing well, and that's what you should do. Now, the president's job, he's doing what he's supposed to be doing right now, getting the right people in the right positions. Hit the streets running, like I said yesterday. And he doesn't need to badmouth anybody or whatever. Your job, like other talk show hosts and conservative shows, are to expose the fraud and the walk up to the banking teller and get your $500,000 to do something for Kamala. So bottom line is this. You keep doing what you do, my friend, and then our president is doing exactly what he needs to do. He doesn't need to talk negative. He needs to be positive and do the right thing and get this country back on its feet again. And prosperity is going to be wonderful for all people.
I agree, man. I think it's coming. I think we're at the turning point. I said in my monologue earlier. Thank you, brother. Hey, enjoy that Mustang. Good ride. All right. See you, Spark. That was Wolverine Dan. I'm sorry. Yeah, listen, we'll take a break right now. When we come right back, I'll take some text messages, wrap this up, and I'll tell you who's coming on the show tomorrow. I just got confirmation a moment ago. Show me the money. You know what the problem is? They can't show you the money. They don't know where it is right now. They have $20 million in debt. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, I'm going to some text messages momentarily, but I will also tell you that a couple things. One is stay tuned for tomorrow's show. We just got it confirmed that U.S. Senator Katie Britt will be on at 3 p.m., I believe it is. So 3 p.m. tomorrow, Katie Britt. Now, there's been a lot of... chatter, and that's all I would put it down, is chatter. It's not like there's been a news report or, you know, but chatter about whether she really voted for Rick Scott. And I'll be honest with you, I will question her on it. And I even got some information from her campaign a moment ago giving me the breakdown on why they believe that this information is being put out incorrectly and how it can be shown to be incorrect that she did, in fact, vote for Rick Scott. Okay, listen, here's the thing. You have to ask yourself, to what benefit would it be to try and tell the world the lie that you voted for someone that would be so easily proven if you did not? All right? So I'm willing to take it at face value. Now, do I believe, I saw this all the time, do I believe she may have counted votes? Possibly. She may well have, I don't know this for a fact, but she may well have gone to John Thune and said, you've got the votes you need. My people back home need to see me vote for Rick Scott. And then go do it, because political ploys like that happen all the time. I'm not saying that happened, but what I am saying is she said she voted for Rick Scott, and her campaign, or her team says she voted for Rick Scott. I'm pretty sure we're going to have to believe she voted for Rick Scott. So anyway, I will ask her that tomorrow. I will question her on it, and then we'll let her describe what she wants to describe from there. In the meantime, a lot's happening in D.C., and I am pretty sure that whether she really voted for Rick Scott or not, the whole chatter thing is going to go away pretty soon, and we're going to be down to business. I got several text messages. Oh, before I say that, we were talking offline about our social media. You've just seen some major upticks. And so, listen, I'm going to pause a moment and brag on JP. because JP has been putting stuff out. Like our social media content is going bananas all of a sudden. I mean, we got you put up one short video on YouTube and it's hit over 1,000 views in just like a few hours.
4 hours and it got over 1,000 views and posted a video 2 days ago that is currently at 3,600 views, I think, on YouTube. And we've gotten around 50 new subscribers within the last couple of days. So a lot of trending upwards on YouTube.
A lot of trending. And by the way, a lot of y'all right now are watching us live stream on social media. Love that. So here's the deal. You can follow all that we do. Right Side Media is the parent company. Right Side Radio is what you're listening to. It's just one of our productions. We have multiple video podcasts. We have The Written Word that goes out to news outlets all over the state every week. We got the radio show. Then we podcast the radio show. Over 250,000 downloads of the podcasted version of the radio show. But if you want to follow us, and by the way, it also helps us. And so we're asking for you to go ahead and subscribe. So go to YouTube and just hit subscribe on Right Side Media. And by the way, there's another company called Right Side Broadcasting Network. They spell theirs with two words. We're with one word, Right Side. So find the right one. But all I'm saying is go follow us. You can follow us on Twitter at @rightside_media. You can follow me personally at Sen Phil Williams. That's S-E-N Phil Williams. We live stream the show through all those outlets, plus Rumble.
On Rumble and Right Side Media, also on Twitch. And if you want to go to rightsidemedia.org, there's also a link there to watch us live. But yeah, like you said, we'd greatly appreciate it if you subscribe to the YouTube and also follow us on Twitter at @rightside_media. It'd help us out a lot.
Mike from Huntsville checked in. He says, Mike from Huntsville, Bruce Springsteen, this gun for hire was, yeah, exactly. This gun is for hire, was for hire. That's personal. That's awesome. Mike from Florence says, you can also subscribe via the website. Thank you, Mike. Mike, you're hired.
Yeah. There
you go. Mike is not working on commission. He's just a fan. Yeah, he's right. I forgot about the website.
Yep.
Rightsidemedia.org has all the linkage. Everything's on there. Plus, you can do our subscription followers from there. Roy from Hartsel says, as regards these celebrities, says, yeah, they got paid a lot. Yeah. And listen, there are no checks that we know of right now made out to Jon Bon Jovi or to Bruce Springsteen. But here's the thing. At some point, silence is deafening, right? It's the roaring silence. Them not saying, I never got paid. I mean, if they want to clear the air, hey, Bruce Springsteen, born in the USA, just step up to the mic and go, y'all stop it. I did not get paid. I mean, at least Oprah had the brass to say, I did not make a dime off that, even though we know that $1 million went to her organization. But if you did get paid, and so you don't want to say anything so people won't know. Guess what? We know because you won't say anything. Just saying. Gary from Decatur says, Phil, do you think that most of the objections to Pete Hegseth, okay, now we're stepping aside here, are because he was not of general officer grade rank? Says, pretty hard for a flag officer to take orders from an 04, especially from the ring knockers. Princeton is not the only, isn't the point or Annapolis. Yeah, I mean, there's going to be some of that. Truthfully, I think we've had a number of them in the past who have not been high-ranking military in their own careers. And I believe we've had some that weren't military at all. So they're going to have to get over it. You know what? Because it is what it is. It's a chain of command. And we are a nation in which the civilian sector actually governs the military. And if they can't handle it, guess what? We're already looking to axe some people. Maybe they need to go. All right, coming up next, Butters and Lee. You guys stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I'm talking about this one right here, y'all. I mean, Alabama. This show goes way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. All right, so this is a time when we move forward on a thing that I love to do. I bring in folks who a lot of times are either in the background or they're just, you know, contributors to what we do, and but they mean a lot to us. And so we do a segment where we bring in two of those, and I think one of them we're still having trouble getting connectivity right now. So it may wind up being a proxy JP, you may have to be a proxy for Butters today. What do you think about that?
I guess he'll step in.
That's okay. We'll take you. All right. So, listen, I'm going to go ahead and with a proxy for the Butters vote, I'm going to call the roll. Lee from Huntsville, are you on the line right now?
I am here, and I'd be happy to talk the entire time.
You can filibuster, and can't nobody say nothing about it.
Exactly.
We're proud you're here. Thank you, sister. And then JP sitting in for the Butters while the connection problems are being worked out. So in the meantime, I'm going to call it. Hit it, man. All right, we're going to get this thing started. So, Lee, obviously I'm going to you first while we're still trying to work out the connection with Butters. But so Trump appointments, which right now feel a lot to me kind of like watching the NFL draft. It's just kind of like got this kind of hype and energy and fun. But what and who of the Trump appointments this far has been the biggest surprise or the biggest disappointment, and why? You give us your thoughts on it.
Biggest surprise would probably be Matt Gaetz for Attorney General. Obviously, I mean, everybody's saying that, but I agree with them. Although he's a firebrand, I don't mind it at all. I really thought it might be, you know, Phil Williams. I mean, Ken Paxton from Texas. Well, you would have accepted, right?
Had he called, I'd listen, no.
I really thought Ken Paxton was in the running for that.
I think he was in the running.
I do get, you know, why. Biggest disappointment for me is, and this is just because I'm not a Marco Rubio fan at all. I think he's a rhino. I think he's a very safe pick, but I don't truly believe that he has, you know, I would not be 100% sure he has Trump's back on everything. That's just, he's a little bit squirmy and a little bit wiggly. But, you know, I know some of the others, some people have been surprised on Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, but I mean, she was a governor for a while.
Yeah.
You know, they have to deal with Homeland Security within their state. This isn't like such a big stretch that they're making it out to be.
And she really assisted in the border issue. I mean, she was sending her National Guard down to the southern border. I mean, she was all in, and she was very vocal. And she was even a VP, potential VP pick at some point until it came out that she, like, you know, euthanized her dog with a .22 caliber.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. That one line in a book cost her the vice presidency, I think. Also, Pete Hegseth for defense sec. He was definitely an out there pick. I was hoping for General Flynn to be fit in somewhere because I think he deserves to be. He deserves recompense for what was taken from him solely because he was put there by, you know, Obama hated him.
So how about this? Let me jump in on that. How about General Michael Flynn to head up the same FBI that ruined his life a few years ago? How about that?
I mean, I thought about that, and I think that would be awesome. I've heard other people mention for head of FBI, but I think he would be a perfect choice for that. Yeah.
I think that would be,
I mean, that
would be righteous. Oh, yeah, there'd be people inside the FBI going, oh, God.
gnashing of teeth. Yeah,
time to drop my retirement papers. All right, so let me back up here a second, because I asked you the why on this. So you're apparently okay with Matt Gaetz, although he was your surprise, but you're not okay with Marco Rubio, which you've never been okay with Marco Rubio for anything. I don't think you're okay with Marco Rubio existing.
I wouldn't say existing. I just don't trust him.
Okay. So tell me, all right, let me go back to Gaetz. Gaetz, you're okay with him. Why?
Well, because what Trump is doing now is the opposite of what he was doing in 2016 or in 2015 at this time, getting ready to take office in 2016. And as he has said before, he had no idea, honestly, how to do this. And he's following a lot of other people's guidance, a lot of other people's suggestions. He doesn't know a lot of the people he's placing in office, and he has some serious backstabbers in there because of it. What he's doing right now is putting people that he trusts in every one of those positions with a high level of trust, a high degree of trust. And he is putting people in there that he knows has his back. And that's why I think Gaetz is in there, because he was such a vocal defender of Trump. And he doesn't shrink from saying the hard things. And sometimes he just, not only does he not shrink, but he throws it in your face. So I think Trump respects him for that. And I just think these people he's surrounding himself with are diehard Trump loyalists. And that's what he's looking for.
Okay, but if that's the case, then why do you not say that about Rubio? Because I think, so me personally, I disagree. I think Rubio is going to make a great Secretary of State. I think he's custom made for it. I like him as the guy. And I know that you're one of those who believes he's a rhino. But I don't. I don't think that about him.
Well, I mean, okay. Here's the thing. He'll prove himself out to be one way or another. I would have thought Jeff Sessions would have been an awesome attorney general. Well, he wasn't. So, you know, people can surprise you, and I'm open to being surprised that Marco Rubio, you know, does a good job. I mean, he's a career politician. He's hung in it for the long haul. I just think he has made some decisions and some votes that I don't like, and that I just get – I've always got the feeling that he didn't really, he was never on the Trump train, but he tolerated it. So let's just, I'm willing to be surprised by him.
All right. Well, tell you what, I'm going to go ahead and flip on over to the Butter Man, and I will go ahead. Butters, I am taking ownership over this, brother. I sent you two texts about today's show. One said 3:30 and one said 4. So I will do push-ups later after I get off the air.
I expected to be counted in a four count method.
That's right. In this four count method, down 1, 2, 3, 1. Okay. All right. Butters, my question that we just spent several minutes opining on, because she was happy to filibuster in the absence of the Butters saying, "Where's my turn?" But of the Trump appointments thus far, man, what and who of the Trump appointments have been your biggest surprise? And is there anyone that's been your biggest disappointment? And why would that be?
Well, so I think I'd say I don't know that I know all of them to really know what to be surprised about, other than any of them that are a surprise is probably a good thing. Because I keep thinking if we go with people that
I'm not sure that qualifies as an answer. I can't give you that. I'm sorry.
I know. I am trying. I really kind of want people that are going to shock everybody.
Okay.
Because so, I just different stuff is what we're going to need.
So with Matt Gaetz coming in as AG, you're good with that because it's shock value?
Yeah, to some extent.
You know, and
look,
I think
if you want
what
you know what he's saying. He's saying if your political opponents, I wouldn't say enemies, but if your political diametrically opposed people are upset about these picks, then you're probably on the right track.
Well, they could have appointed Mother Teresa. They could appoint Jesus, and they would still be upset. I mean, I'm saying there's no way in the world. We could have appointed Kamala Harris to be the attorney general, and they would have been upset. So there's no way around that one.
True.
That's a valid way to look at it. I'm just not sure what the answer is, but I'd rather go with, hey, if they upset, then that you're probably on the right track.
All right. Well, then former Army or military guy, I'm sorry, Navy guy, I'm going to go ahead and just ask you then, how do you feel about Pete Hegseth as Secretary of Defense?
I can definitely see the argument of, really? But a fresh set of eyes, I don't know. He also doesn't come from a lifelong indoctrination of one thought process.
No, in fact, I think he comes from a lifelong indoctrination of not having one thought process and not being caught up in the machine. I've warmed up to Pete Hegseth. That idea has been okay with me. Just saying.
Yeah, I mean,
he's gonna make the military manly again.
Oh.
Well, and somebody that's not been caught up in the flag ranks and a lifelong career in the military, but still has that military experience, I think there's value in that perspective.
He's got let's be honest, he's going to have to overcome some personal life baggage. I mean, he does have some personal life baggage. He's going to have some of the, well, you're just a news guy. How can you? But he's got two Ivy League degrees. He's got combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. He's led large organizations. How many organizations in the world are as large as the Department of Defense? But nonetheless, he's going to have some stuff to overcome. But then you look at it, and I think the troops are going to love him. I think the troops are going to love having a guy who sounds and looks more like them, who has more tattoos than they do. And he's got one tattoo on one arm that, and I'm trying to think what it is in Latin, but it's it translates to God wills it, which is one of the Crusader.
Deuce Vault.
Yeah, Deuce Vault. That's it. Yeah. God wills it.
And he's not hard on the eyes either. I mean, just saying.
Okay, well, you can just say that, but we're not just saying that. Just Butters, don't say that, whatever you do.
I'm not going to say that. But now, I was always the guy that came into the military and tended to ask why. And, you know, that isn't always good, but I'd certainly like a Secretary of Defense that would ask why. Why do we do it this way? Explain to me. This doesn't make sense. So.
And I want one who also looks at common sense and says, why not? I'll be honest with you. There are times in my prayer life when I am like, Lord, why would this be? Lord, why? But then I find myself shifting because I recognize the way things are moving, and I'll say, Lord, why not? You're going to have to tell me not to do it, because right now it feels like I'm in a why not mode at this point. And I think that we need somebody who's got – we don't need the stodgy, same old way it's always been done in the military. So I'm with Pete Hegseth right now, and I'm okay with that. We just used up the entire time on one question. We just did. All right, we're taking a break. Now that we got Butters here, because he finally figured out what Williams' clock looks like, we're going to do Butters and Lee when we get back. Round two, they ask me questions, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Giving you all the truth you could slap on a bumper sticker. Okay, so we're going to round two of Butters and Lee. I'm going to just go ahead and say this is the time when I wait to see what questions they have for me. I don't even know what they are in advance, and I'm going with Lee first. What do you have for moi?
I was really interested that Trump chose Susie Wiles, and I felt as if for chief of staff.
Right.
And I felt as if the fact that he chose the first woman has been really kind of underwhelmingly reported. Do you think he's ever going to get any kudos for that?
No, he'll never get kudos for that. I mean, look at his appointments so far. He's already appointed, the very first appointment he made was for a strong, intelligent woman to be his chief of staff. And by the way, chief of staff to the president of the United States is one of the most powerful positions in the world. Thank you very much. And so you got, right. you got that, you got Tulsi Gabbard, you got Kristi Noem. I know I'm forgetting someone, but there's
Elise Stefanik.
Thank you very much. I mean, almost a third or half of his appointments thus far have been strong, intelligent women. Thank you, Mark Cuban. I hope you're paying attention. But the media is not going to say boo about it. I mean, the media is going to report it, but they're not going to give him the kind of credit to discredit the things that were said about him during the campaign. They're just going to go, well, you know, she's a radical, or well, we just don't know about her background, and we're not sure she'll get confirmed. They're going to do all that, but they won't do the, well, he just picked a strong, intelligent woman. So, no, they won't give him that kind of credit. Nope. No. Do you?
And I just think it's the first woman chief of staff ever selected. I just think it's funny because people want to talk about the misogyny and whatnot, and I'm like, but what is he actually doing? The opposite of that.
Yeah, and you know what? If you look back, you can find that over and over again, you can prove that it's never been about sexism with him. There may have been some, you know, relationships, like, you know, his daughter, who, by the way, Ivanka is sharp as a tack, man. She can run organizations. Yeah. And the fact that she was working in his administration is just nothing but good for him and for us. But no, he won't get that kind of credit. It's ridiculous. It's crying shame, but it's true.
I think it's also pretty crazy to see all of the other elected officials that are tweeting. They're just lining up tweeting about, I'm so concerned about, you know, the Democrat elects, including the women. I'm so concerned about their background. This is it's nonsense.
What you're hearing is A, they're not liberal, and B, they're not pro-abortion. That's what you're hearing right now.
That's what you're hearing.
Exactly. All right, with about 3.5 minutes left, Butterman, what question do you have for me? And it has nothing to do with clocks and text messages telling you what time to come on.
So I'm gonna take a point of privilege because I have access to you and you know some things.
Okay, good Lord.
Yeah. So this whole deal with the Senate majority leader, and I'm sure you've probably already talked about this ad nauseum on the show in the last couple of days, but the Senate majority leader vote and Senator Britt,
right?
What is the deal with she voted for Scott on the first round? Is there multiple rounds of voting? What is the process that they actually underwent?
So
allegedly.
Yeah. And so first of all, I said it earlier in the show, and I said it, I think, yesterday. And Senator Britt's coming on tomorrow, so we'll let her tell the world herself. But there is no advantage to her in the world to lie about having cast a vote, even though it's a secret ballot, which, you know, take that for what it's worth, it's a secret ballot. It's a caucus thing. It's not meant to be the same level of, like, voting for legislation on the Senate floor. But nonetheless, there is zero benefit in the world to her lying about her vote, knowing full well that all it would take is one person to leak that she really didn't do it and get caught doing. So what I'm saying is, why would she lie?
Right.
So there's that. Secondly, what can very well have happened, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'm saying I've seen it in Montgomery, is someone does what we call vote counting. They're gauging things. They're waiting to see. And then they find out that, oh, the person that I was sort of tacitly supporting, John Thune, and he's got enough votes now without me. So you go up and say, hey, John, just so you know, I got to vote against you because my people back home need to see that. Well, it's not going to hurt him. It's going to help her. It all washes out the same. I don't know that happened. I'm not even trying to portray that's what happened. But it's saying it could have happened. But then what we do know is this. She says she voted for Rick Scott. I will say this. Her campaign has already made it clear to me. They sent me something earlier saying that there's an invented list of Scott voters that made its way around social media with 13 names. But four of those names have never even said they supported Scott. The notion that all 13 Scott votes are accounted for is simply not correct. And then they give the actual public Scott votes. And then they say there's four of those people, and they name them, that have not even openly said, yeah, that's who I voted for. So what they're saying is there's an invented list being touted, and that she's, you know, being, you know, discredited unfairly. And I got like 30 seconds left, but what's
yeah,
up?
So did they, was there just one, like, what was the process for the vote? Do you know?
Yeah, the process for the vote was the same as anything else you might have in a small group like that. It was a ballot written, turn it in, somebody counts it, and they announce the results. You know, and it's a closed door executive session caucus meeting. So that's exactly the way the way we did it in the state Senate. I mean, that's how we chose Del Marsh as our pro tem. We're done. Wow, we're done. All right, Butters and Lee, and Butters, I owe you those push-ups, man. I'll get them back to you. Phil Williams, Army doing Navy's push-ups. Not really going to happen. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three. And man, we got big doings. I'm gonna be covering some cool stuff here momentarily. I will tell you this though. You guys, listen, some of y'all are so responsive. I can't tell you how much we appreciate it. We told you earlier that we've got several things available to you right now. I mean, Right Side Media is growing like crazy. Get in on the ground floor, I'm saying. Right Side Radio is how we started. Right Side Radio then became just one of the productions of Right Side Media. I mean, we've got written stuff. We've got podcasting. We've got video podcasting. And we got live streaming of a daily live radio show. It's just, I still sit back sometimes and think, how did this happen? But I'm having a great time doing it. You know, it's like I was talking to some folks today. Actually, it was the Right Side board. We had a board meeting this morning. And because, yes, we have a board. But I had a board meeting this morning, and somebody said on the board, you know, it's that old saying that if you do something you love, you never work a day in your life. And that's a lot of times the way I feel doing this. But we've got several things for you. One of the things we just started is called the Right Side Report. The Right Side Report is our daily email blast that goes out, tells everybody ahead of time what's going to be on the show that day, tells everybody what the latest podcast is. If we got new merchandise, which, by the way, we have new merchandise coming, you can order it on through the links it gives you. If you want to sign up for the newsletter, if you want to get it dropped into your inbox so you can see it every day, just go to that phone number we use for the show, 833-68-RIGHT, 833-68-RIGHT. and text one word, newsletter. It's all one word, newsletter. And you'll immediately get a link back from our system that will give you a chance to, you know, click on it, sign up for the newsletter. Bam, you start getting it. We've had a bunch of signups from that just in the last few days. And we're going to have a bunch more next week, I know for a fact. So, yeah, Right Side Report every day. The other thing is we just said, hey, would you please follow us on YouTube or follow us on our social medias? And a bunch of y'all did in the last few minutes. So
thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We like it.
And a part of that newsletter as well, there's an option to subscribe to the YouTube and the social media at the bottom of it. So there's an option there as well.
Yep, absolutely. It's all in one place. And it takes you, a lot of it takes you to our website, rightsidemedia.org. Okay, enough shameless plugs. Enough. Did we have a caller a minute ago? What's going on?
Didn't want to talk.
Okay, all right. Good enough. Let me get some text messages because some of y'all are some texting machines. Let me see what I got here. Marie from Madison. She texted in earlier with regards to celebrity endorsements for Kamala Harris saying, hey, Phil, if these ultra-rich celebrities actually thought that Donald Trump was Hitler and the greatest existential threat to our existence, then why did they even get paid? If I really felt that way, I would have campaigned for free in order to, quote, save democracy. Marie, you make an excellent point. Please give her a round of applause. That was a well-thought-out text message. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Marie from Madison. Grady from Arley just actually thinks that, what's he trying to say? SecDef. He wants, okay.
It's kind of funny. Don't say it, but it's kind of funny what it autocorrected to.
Wow.
So just sub in SecDef for whatever that was.
voice texting will get you every time, man. He was telling me, I was talking earlier about the fact that not every Secretary of Defense has been a flag officer, admiral, general, whatever. And he points out, he says, yeah, Robert McNamara was a lieutenant colonel in World War II, SecDef. And then he tried back quick, SecDef, sorry. David Buckies again says, Phil, Senate certifies the Electoral College on January 6th. President-elect Trump is inaugurated on January 20th. When can we expect the Senate to begin confirming Trump's appointments? Okay, you bring up a great point, David. I think we're looking at the possibility of what they call recess appointments. So here's a thing. In fact, Charlene actually kind of, you know, motivated me the other day to read up on this to make sure that I kind of grasped it. And I need to remember, if we have time tomorrow, to ask Katie Britt about this. All right. The Senate confirms major appointments to the judicial branch or the cabinet positions of the president. It's a Senate confirmation. House has nothing to do with it. All Senate. The Democrats played games with Trump's confirmations in the last go-round. They messed with him for the longest time. He couldn't get people confirmed. He had vacancies in his administration. Why? Because they would not confirm them, but they also would not go into recess because the law says that confirmation shall be conducted by the Senate. However, if the Senate is in recess and a vacancy exists, that the president may then make his own recess appointment, which can be for no longer than 2 years. In other words, it's temporary until such time as the Senate convenes to actually confirm. All right, what does that mean? That means that recess appointments, which is not uncommon, give a president the ability to say, you, and you, go to work. Let's do our things. And they can without having to wait on these long, drawn-out Senate confirmation processes. Now, the Senate confirmation process is important. At the state level, I was a part of many confirmations for people to boards of trustees and key positions for the governor's cabinet and things like that. But if you use it as a political weapon, you can stymie an administration from being able to do the job by not having key people in charge of different departments. That being said, what did the Democrats do? How did they avoid this? Phil, don't they ever go home? I thought they all went home once in a while. Yeah, they did. You know what they did, though? They would only, instead of recessing, they would go ahead and adjourn at the call of the chair. What does that mean? That means they left somebody behind. So everybody went home, but they rotated. Schumer would have them rotate. Rotate who's not leaving D.C. If one person stays back and technically wields the gavel, then the Senate is not in recess, and they can't use the recess appointment power. And that's what they did to him constantly. So Trump has already said, I need to know that I've got recess appointment power, because he wants to come in on day one, get inaugurated, and say, here's my cabinet. And I think he should. And I think they owe it to him. And I think right now we're hearing that they will give it to him.
Can I just say this too?
Yes. Yeah.
You don't see this problem on the left of they're so unified on who, like, if they were in this position where they were able to sweep, you know, the president, the House, and the Senate, there would be no issue on appointing a Senate majority leader. They would all concur about who they want, and there would be no issues. But it's just so frustrating that with this sweep, and then just add a little on the top of the Senate majority leader, and not getting the Senate majority leader that majority of the country, or excuse me, the majority of the Republican Party around the country wanted. And it's just, I don't get why we can't get unified on stuff like this. And obviously Mitch McConnell, I think, played a big role in that, and glad he's on his way out. But then on the flip side of that, now in their reaction to them not being unified, we're going to put out fake lists and then call Katie Britt a rhino and dog her everywhere, and without any sort of proof, just running off of these reports and seeing it and believing them firsthand, and then going ballistic, calling Katie Britt a rhino. It drives me nuts. But also the not being able to unify and get the guy in charge or the woman in charge that everybody can agree on in the party, you know, that also drives me nuts. So I don't get it. I don't get why we can't get unified and why we have to ruin it would have been the cherry on top, get Rick Scott, which it seemed like most of the Republican voters were unified on, but then the people who, you know, who were voted into the Senate can't listen to their constituents and then put the guy that they want in charge. So
yeah, I agree. But then also then fight and fuss about it and try to accuse people who didn't.
Yeah, the reaction to that being way over the top and incorrect. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, on the one hand, politics is messy. Mm-hmm. It just is. Democracy is messy. It just is. But I think there are times when we make it needlessly messy. It's almost like, you know, you can sit at the table and have the same meal and one person can mess the whole table up and the other one doesn't. And I don't know why we do that to ourselves either, but I've seen it happen time and time again. That being said, there is also some measure of joy, I guess, in the fact that we are allowed to have differing opinions. In the end, you know what's going to happen? John Thune's going to be the Senate Majority Leader. We'll have to get over it. I wish it wasn't. In the end, we still won in a big, 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 big way. So all said and done, I'm looking right now at the fact that John Thune got elected, and I'm going, dadgummit. But I also look at it and go, dadgummit, but let's get to work. Those who want to find gripes will always find gripes. Those who have sour grapes as their meal every single day will always eat sour grapes. And they probably need to go ahead and recognize that it's not doing as much good. Gripe, complain, but then by God, at some point, put it aside and get back to work. So, did you just get me on a rant?
It's just, you know, yeah, I think I did.
No more donuts for you. Darlene from Decatur says, Lee from Huntsville needs to read Rubio's book, An American Son. He really is a conservative and pro-Trump. Sometimes the representatives have to make the better of the bad decisions. That's a great point. You know, it's funny. I taught my grandson, who, by the way, is 5 years old, to play checkers. Actually, you know what? I probably didn't teach him. His daddy taught him, but we played together. But then there would be times we'd be playing. The little guy was good. Got a little embarrassing. I realized I actually had to play. It wasn't one of those things where you can go, oh, just a gimme. No, you had to actually be careful because he was going to do a triple jump on you if you're not careful. But at one point, I'll never forget this. He learned it and he remembered it. He looked at me. He calls me Cap. He goes, Cap, there's not a good move. I said, buddy, this is when you got to make your best worst move. And he looked at me and goes, He repeated that back to me for every time we played after that. Well, Cap, I guess it's time for me to do my best, worst move. Sometimes you got to do that in politics, too.
Yeah.
Real quick before I go to the break, Russell from Rural Route 1. I always have a hard time saying that. He says, how's this for crazy? Trust Trump to pick the right people. Matt Gaetz, Florida State undergrad, William & Mary Law School, he tells me. But then he says, how's this for crazy? Trust Trump to pick the right people. Yeah, I mean, by and large, I've been pretty pleased. Russell, hope you are too. Lori from Jackson, Alabama says, I don't know who the she is. Says she,
Katie, oh, sorry,
Katie Britt. Okay. She took lessons from Shelby. She counted votes and was safe to vote Scott. There should have been never be secret votes. There will always be secret votes on a caucus meeting, Lori. There always will be. Here's the reason why. number one, it is not an elected position. It is, I get it. Listen, before you start saying something, I get it. They're all elected officials. We should know everything they do. We should be able to see how many socks are in their drawer. We should know what brand of underwear they wear. No, we shouldn't. But when I was in the state Senate, we didn't elected our pro tem the exact same way. We had a secret ballot. Why is that? Because there's a lot of people who would be deeply concerned that they would never get a chairmanship or a position that would advance their careers if they were openly voting against someone. Now there's people like Tommy Tuberville who are like, screw this, I'll say what I think. He could care less. And I love that. I love that. But keep in mind, Katie Britt just did too. She just openly said, I have supported Rick Scott. That, she didn't have to say that.
But they choose to believe a fake list than her herself. So.
Yeah, or at the very least, they choose to believe a list she says is not true. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
All right, I tell you what, I ran long. Take me to a break, brother. You said let me run on. I'm going to rant on. You're going to let me just run? Come on, JP, can you let me run? I can't run like that.
Well, I'm running with you, so that's a problem.
All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, I'm going to the phones because I got to have a short segment. And I think, is it Jeff Rowe is on the line? Jeff from Indiana is on the line. Hey, brother, how you doing?
Oh, I've been pretty good till I had to wait 2 hours at Falkville for a trailer.
Oh, Lord. Is there some Democrat in charge of that way station down there? What is going on?
It could be. I'm not sure. Hey, you know, people, you're talking about the price of the elections.
Yeah.
You know, she spent $1 billion. Most people don't realize how much money that is.
Yeah.
Breaking it down, you can buy 4,000 middle-class homes for $1 billion. That's $250,000 a piece.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, just, you know, that people don't realize. And then you get talking about how much the national debt is in the trillions. That same home, we could buy 148 million houses at.
Holy cow. Yeah.
So, you know, it's just the money numbers are boggling. But you know, this October was Christmas in October for all the advertisers because you had your normal advertising. And then, as you and I both know, there is no such thing as a discount for political advertisements.
No. Hey! By the way, Jeff, I gotta jump in and say too, I believe if we go ahead and calculate them at 75 cents each, you could have also bought 1,333,300 anyway, a whole lot of pickled eggs.
Oh, well, now they're $20 a jar, so you know.
Actually, you could buy 1.3 billion of these eggs. That's what you could have bought. That's awesome. 1.3 billion pickled eggs if you had had $1 billion.
I think the UN would probably shut us down because that would add to a lot of global warming, I'm afraid. It would be a toxic atmosphere for sure.
Oh, Lord God. Yes, it would. All the chickens in the world couldn't make that many pickled eggs, and then we sure couldn't abide by the people who ate them, that's for sure.
I know it. It'd be like chemical warfare, I believe.
This conversation has devolved.
We'd wipe Europe off the face of the earth.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? Europe would probably be glad to go at that point.
Yeah, it might be.
Oh,
it
my gosh.
It would surely stop the Ukrainian conflict for sure.
Too funny. All right, where are you on the road right now, man? You said you waited 2 hours for your next load. Where are you on the road back?
I'm at the 46-mile sticker in Tennessee here, just passing the Love's truck stop.
Well, you and some fried fish make it home safe, all right?
I'll try to.
All right.
Have a good one,
see
Bill.
You, bro. Bye-bye. 1.3 billion pickled eggs. Yes, the chemical warfare would be awful. It would be bad. How much time we got there, brother? Just tell me on the
got a little less than a minute.
Thomas Mathen says, recess appointments. Can the president of the Senate declare a recess of the Senate over the objections of all Senate Dems? Yes. It's actually the president of the Senate that declares it. So the president of the Senate can go up and declare it at any given time. That's why now that we're in charge, we don't have to worry about them trying to play games. So if you see games played with this, it's Republicans against Republicans at that point. So, yes, sir, that's exactly the way it works. John from Huntsville says, Phil, I saw they're now recounting the Senate race between, that's Pennsylvania, between Casey and McCormick. Said, I hope Pennsylvania doesn't start recounting the presidential votes because they might add some extra votes and Harris wins. Nah, she couldn't even catch up then, man. We swept the states. And we could have done without Pennsylvania and still won.
It was too big to rig.
Too big to rig. We exceeded the margin of cheat.
Exactly.
All right, listen, we're going to take a break. We will come right back. We're going to talk about some cacistocracy. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation, this one right here, Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, the Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. What am I going to say when we expand, JP? I've got that. I can say that in my sleep. By the way, people wonder sometimes, do I say that? Do I read that? No, I just it just flows.
I think that's a good problem to have.
Darn. That's a good problem to have. Did I say we're going to expand?
I don't know. Did you?
I don't know. Was I prognosticating? Anyway, more to come on that. Let me take in a few text messages real quick. Bob from Madison just texted in and says, that phone call between you and Jeff stunk. That's awful. Can you? I don't know whether to give him a laugh sound effect or a womp wah sound effect. Can you do both? I don't know. That's what you get for a good dad joke. That's what you get. Scott from Athens says, Maha. He said, I'm 6 foot, 200 pounds, and ready to be Trump's bodyguard. I'll do it for free. I'll be his armor. I can't wait till he rolls out Cash Patel. Yeah, Cash Patel, we have yet to get an announcement on that. I think he's going to be somewhere in the mix, though. But I do want to see Mike Flynn get something. I would love to see Michael Flynn get a position. I mean, listen, there's always Secretary of the Army. I think that would be interesting.
By the way, did you get the Maha reference there? Maha. Of the Make America Healthy Again, Bobby Kennedy's.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I thought he was laughing. I didn't realize
Maha.
That was Maha. I thought it was like, you know, maybe Hawaiian. Mahalo. Okay. Steve from Harvest says, I think Butters was asking why two rounds of voting and how did that work? Thinking of it like a primary election, every candidate received votes in the first round. Nobody received more than 50% of the vote. There was a second round of votes with the top two candidates. I believe that's correct, Steve. I don't know for a fact. I'll try and check on that before we go on the air. But I think I saw Katie Britt's statement saying she was proud to vote for, cast the first vote for Rick Scott, which probably meant that Rick Scott was not in the final running, and then she cast her vote for whoever in the second time around.
Which also Rick Scott retweeted that and thanked her, so I don't think he would do that if she didn't vote for him, but I digress.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did. He retweeted it and thanked her for her support.
Well, there you go. Jeff Rowe from Indiana did just text in and says, maybe I can go to work at the armed services after a few pickled eggs put me in the chamber where they have to put on the gas mask in total darkness. Listen, I shouldn't have started this whole egg discussion. It's getting bad. Listen, I can tell you stories about being in the gas chamber.
Yeah, I've seen videos of that being a requirement. I know for the Marines, at least, it's a requirement to...
Listen. I've done it multiple times, hated it every time, but the very first time I did it, they so overdid the amount of CS gas. It's a tear gas, but it's called CS gas. They did so much CS gas in the chamber, you couldn't see more than about 10 feet. It was that thick. I mean, it was like this massive cloud, and it's like a yellowish cloud, and it's awful. And you're standing there with a gas mask on. You begin to feel it burning your skin, whatever exposed skin, you're starting to feel it burn. And then they told you, here's what we're going to do. And they said, we're going to take you one at a time. You're going to remove your mask, and then you will say your name and where you're from and your rank. You know, and I'm like, okay, I can do this. I'm jazzed up for it. All right. Then you start seeing, it's so hard to see in there because there was so much CS gas. You start to see people flailing. All you can see is this body. Looks like something out of a zombie movie. There's somebody flailing over there in the cloud. Like, what is happening? Oh, that didn't go well. Then it's my turn. And I go over there, and he says, remove your mask. And so I took a deep breath, remove my mask. It's already burning my eyes immediately. And then he says, say it. And I'm like, well, you know how a lot of times you talk and you kind of go, take a little deep breath? Yeah. I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
I went, I was trying to say Phil Williams, and I went, fuh! That's all I remember was, fuh! And next thing I know, he threw me out the door. I mean, like, literally threw me out the door. I had snot ropes down to my knees.
Oh,
and snot ropes down to my knees. They're like, there's like blowing in the breeze. I couldn't see. I'm wandering around crying like a baby. Not really crying. It was tear gas making my eyes water. Yeah. And then after a while, you're like, it wasn't bad. That was okay. I'll do that again.
And not to go down a rabbit hole in that, but is there a reason they do that? I mean, I feel like there's a way to test using the gas mask without actually having to go into.
There is not.
There is not.
There is not. Oh. There is no way to inspire someone to believe that your protective gear will actually do its job without putting them in a position where they see that it does its job.
That's a good point.
So, now, I mean, you can trust that, yes, that bullet will hurt me, so you don't need to shoot me to prove it. All right. But the gas mask, first of all, I hated the gas mask. Mm-hmm. I hated my pro mask. You have to carry that thing around. It's like a big giant albatross on your hip. Why do I have to carry this thing? I don't want to put it on. And then the first time you actually have it on and then pull it off and realize what it was protecting you from, you're like, oh, God.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful piece of equipment. I want one personally. I want to sleep with it at night.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Why am I talking about all this?
I don't know.
I don't either. Okay, let's talk about cacistocracy. So I got this stack of stuff right here. We'll see what we can cover in the next few minutes. So listen, what is a cacistocracy? Don't you forget that right here at Right Side, we have our very own lexicon. We have special words that we use, jackassery. And one of them is cacistocracy. A cacistocracy is, you can look it up in the dictionary, K-A-K-I-S-T-O-C-R-A-C-Y. If you were watching online, you saw me refer to my notes to make sure I could spell it correctly. Cacistocracy is defined by Merriam-Webster's dictionary roughly as a government run by the least competent of its citizens. Wow. Does that not sound like where we've been the last 4 years? Okay. Let me give you a few examples of things that we've been dealing with in cacistocracy land. How about this? Story from the Daily Caller came out 2 days ago. The Biden-Harris Health Department spent tens of millions of dollars annually on DEI. The Health Department. Health Department. $38.7 million every year to employ a mere 297 staffers conducting diversity, equity, and inclusion work at HHS. Now, RFK Jr. was just tapped to take over HHS. What do you bet that's going to change? Between RFK Jr. and Musk and Ramaswamy at Doge, I'm saying could be some DEI folks looking for new work. Better polish up the resumes and talk about what else you do besides just, you know, DEI. They each one of those 247 of those employees actually make over $100,000 a year. On top of that, HHS spent $29.4 million to keep 209 workers on the payroll for the Office of Minority Health. Just minority health. Because, you know, it's all about diversity, equity, and inclusion. That Office of Minority Health exists to, quote, improve the health of racial and ethnic minority populations through the development of health policies and programs that eliminate health disparities. What does that mean? Well, we think you've been treated badly. Since we're a systemically racist country, and since you don't have white privilege, we're going to make sure that we put some money into basically staffing an office that talks about you. That's what it's going to do. So the bottom line is, cacistocracy is when you see stuff like that. How about this? Then there's your State Department. Oh, Lord, the State Department. National Pulse, Dateline 3 days ago, revealed State Department DEI policies encourage discrimination against men. What? Yes. This is, by the way, your State Department. The State Department. That's the Department of State that actually, you know, deals with foreign policy and ensuring that there is a level playing field for the United States on the world markets and for making sure that we're not being taken advantage of elsewhere. And yet they're going to do things like, under the guise of equity, they promoted women at higher rates than men with no logical explanation other than the fact that they were based on sex alone. Literally, you could look in the files and you could see, oh, DEI consideration, two equally qualified people. Let's make sure we hire more women, because that's the way we can say we broke the glass ceiling. There you go. How about this one? Knowing full well where the election was heading, knowing full well that this was not going to last, as voters went to the polls, the U.S. Department of Justice under Merrick Garland announced the FBI made more arrests on the January 6 claims from several years ago. They're still searching out phone records to find out who was anywhere near the Capitol. In its 46-month statistical update, the DOJ said that one defendant, only one defendant, has received a sentence reduction based upon the landmark 2024 ruling from Fisher v. United States. That particular ruling says you can't use obstruction of an official proceeding as a felony charge, and they were trying to do that. Only one of them has now had a sentence reduction because of that. But then, and granted, there were some felonies in here. Some of these felonies were on assaulting an officer. Those should be dealt with. You never should have been in that position. Don't do it. However, you've got a ton of people that are now dealing with misdemeanor charges for entering and remaining in a restricted building. It's a public building, but they entered and they remained. What did they do when they were there? Well, they remained. What does that mean? Is that sort of like when they did the activists who went into the rotunda and chanted and played drums and said they weren't going to leave? Is that the same as Code Pink that shows up at public hearings and makes a spectacle? Is that? No, these were just conservatives. So therefore, we're going to have more arrests. I look forward to seeing what Trump does, by the way, with clearing up that measure of cacistocracy and issuing blanket pardons on January 6th. In fact, I wish he could do it on January 6th. Wouldn't that be a hoot? I mean, I don't think that schedule lines up with his inauguration. It's January 20th, I think, his inauguration. Is that right?
January 20th or 21st. I think, yeah, 20th and the first day, 21st. Yeah.
That would be so awesome if he could actually do it on January 6th.
Yeah.
How about this, cacistocracy? Sanctuary state told to cut spending on hotel stays for migrants. Well, is it really that big of a deal? How about $1 billion in 1 year for one state? Massachusetts. A state commission, according to the Daily Caller, Dateline yesterday, a state commission is encouraging Massachusetts to cut costs on emergency shelter services for migrants. The emergency shelter system is expected to spend over $1 billion in the next fiscal year. $1 billion state dollars in the next fiscal year, because they're a sanctuary state. And their governor has even said that she would resist any efforts on the part of the Trump administration to deport people who are illegally in Massachusetts. For the love, if there's ever a layer of cacistocracy, this would be it. That is someone who has nothing, literally has no compunction about saying that they're there for their elected constituents. They're at that point, they're there for an agenda, purely an agenda. There's no statesmanship in there. So there's roughly 355,000 known illegal immigrants in the state of Massachusetts. 355,000 illegal immigrants. Y'all, that would be like 8%. No, it'd be more than that. Hang on a second. That would be, Lord, that would be a healthy chunk of the state of Alabama. It really would. Good night. It's awful. Now, within cacistocracy, we got some other things that are happening, even at the local level. Cacistocracy is stuff like Soros-backed district attorneys, who, thank God, are finally being recalled. We've recalled several of them. I won't go into that entirely. But the last measure of cacistocracy that I've got for you on this very short dipper is the Democrats continuing to push the transgender issue, even though they can tell that overwhelmingly that was the cultural issue that drove more people to the polls. I think it's bigger than abortion. I think the transgender issue, men and women's sports, men and women's locker rooms, pushing it on kids, transgender surgeries on kids, all of that. I think you wrap that up into one nice, neat package. Not neat. you've got probably a bigger social cultural issue driving people to the polls than abortion ever was for the left. Sure, we had the economy, and sure, we had the border as two of the biggest issues driving. But when you come to sociocultural issues, one of the things that drove people to the polls is transgenderism. And even Democrats right now are calling on their party to please move away from it. Congressman Representative Tom Suozzi, who is a Democrat from New York, he's warning his own party, we've got to get away from this. Stop pandering to our far left. And I want everybody to listen to him. At the same time, I'm just enjoying the fact that the Democrats are imploding right now under self-inflicted wounds, by the way. All right, let's take it to the break there, brother. I ran a little bit long. We'll come right back. I'll get a few more text messages and wrap this thing up and head into a Fri-yay. Oh, yeah. Fri-yay's coming. Y'all stay tuned. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. Bunch of text messages to get. Some of y'all have some good guest chamber stories. John from Huntsville has the grades in. He says Butters and Lee both get a solid A for their equally solid performance. Jeff from Indiana gets an A-plus for his amazing pickled egg phone call. Phil gets an A-double-plus for a spectacular performance, which means today's winner is obviously JP with a perfect A-triple-plus. Congratulations. Keep up the good work.
I'm on a roll.
He's a Seinfeld fan.
And an Alabama fan.
That's right. Jeff P. from ARAV says, Phil, great show today. As always, so informative. It said, and Trump is nailing the appointments. The left is losing their minds. Thanks, Jeff P. Appreciate you. Robert from Ardmore says, all 11 million should head to Massachusetts. Wouldn't that be something? It'd be like one of the most populous states in the nation then, if not the most populous. Gary from Decatur says, one time in boot camp was enough for me, and he's got a picture. Oh, yeah, going in the gas chamber. Wow, that's old school looking right there, too. Black and white photos. Thank you for your service. Yeah, gas chamber. There's no fun in that. Joe from Elkmont says, I like the fact that Trump's appointing a significant number of, quote, non-politicians to his cabinet. Isn't that how our forefathers intended it? I'm not arguing the point. David from Bucky says, Phil, while a platoon sergeant in Germany, I was in the gas chamber while the whole platoon went through one squad at a time. Soldiers were not required to remove their masks, didn't have to. Once in the bush, the effect of the gas was apparent as it was in our BDUs. Yeah. Yeah. And you know what's crazy is you almost don't, the last thing you need to do is like reach up and rub your eyes. That's the worst thing in the world you can do. Whew, Lord. Mike from Cox, he says, back in my day, the gas chamber was called the disco hut, but I'll never forget it. Yeah, disco because you began flailing like you were, you know, John Travolta on the disco floor. He said, I hated mop gear too. Yeah, I did too, mop gear. I did, but it was a necessary evil. And I never got over the idea of having to carry around you had these nerve agent shots that you had to hit yourself in the leg. And then there's always the old thing too, by the way, how do you know for sure it's all clear? Well, the lowest ranking man is required to take his mask off first.
That's bad.
Oh, jeez. Jeremy from Madison just says tree huggery. No, the word is newsletter, Jeremy. Newsletter. Bryant from Huntsville says, will you have to retire the word cacistocracy in January? No, at that point, we'll just switch to pointing out what should not ever be allowed to come back. How about that? Brian from Huntsville says, deep breath. He says, I'm flapping my arms and my eyes are wide open. Yeah, he remembers. Badger from Athens says, feed Jeff eggs and hook him to his truck modified to burn methane. There you go. We got it all figured out now, Jeff. And then Bob from Decatur said, let's put Dan Bongino in charge of the Secret Service. Wouldn't that be a hoot? I mean, I think that angry man would just take care of things.
You know, that Dan Bongino is always spot on with his secrets. You know, right after Trump was shot, every single day I tuned into Dan Bongino's show. Like I would pull it up on my phone if I was working out. Because he was the only one that was actually providing anything of substance on the matter, because he was there and, you know, went through it, and he would say stuff and be like, hey, Ted Cruz, I know you're listening. Tomorrow when you're the head of Secret Service is testifying, ask him this. And Ted Cruz would ask him that question, and he'd be like, I don't know. And it was so funny. It was like Bongino was talking through the senators on what to ask, and it was always spot on. So, yeah, I love Bongino when it comes to Secret Service. He's very spot on.
Well, he spent a number of years in the ranks.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. Did he ever make presidential detail? Do you know?
I don't know if he did. I know he's talked about working in the Obama administration, so maybe he did during then. But, yeah, he's been there, done that. He knows what he's talking about.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Steve from Madison has texted in and said, I'm not sure my driver liked the demasking procedures. He must have been the guy. All right, listen. Great show. Tomorrow we have another great one planned for you. Y'all tune in. We will be here. And, oh, by the way, do not forget, there are more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you tomorrow.